Hello. Let's call to order the House Committee on Land Use. It is Tuesday, February 24th. We are opening a work session on House Bill 2229. As you have seen, colleagues, the piece of the bill that we wanted to focus on today is the section on regional problem solving. The Big Look Task Force identified some deficiencies in the current mechanism and process by which regional problem solving is implemented, and indeed some deficiencies or challenges in the current statutes around that system. And so they recommended that we take a look at it, and they made some specific recommendations on how we might update it and make it more useful and accessible to participants. I would like to invite Mr. Whitman to give a brief description of the way the system works in current law and walk us through why the task force thinks this is worthy of our attention. Mr. Whitman? Before you get started, just so we can note, as we have been noting, as we receive written testimony, written comments on the bill, I'd like to note for the record that we have received written input from Peter Dane of Marion County and John Schaefer of Polk County, and those will be added to our record on this bill. Mr. Whitman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, Richard Whitman, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and here today primarily in just capacity as having worked as staff for the Big Look Task Force. I'm handing out two documents to committee members. One is a document that's in color here. This represents the final version of the legislation that was reviewed by the Big Look Task Force at their last hearing, actually in early January, where they reviewed what we then had as the Legislative Council draft. I've passed it out because it includes marginal comments that explain some of the changes to the RPS statutes that I think are helpful for folks in understanding why the task force was recommending what they did. Then I've also handed out a one-page document, looks like this, that is a summary that the department prepared today, giving the committee a quick two-paragraph background on what regional problem solving is, what the problems have been with regional problem solving, and a very high, not even 30,000 foot, but probably 60,000 foot look at what the proposed solutions are to the problems. So, a very quick background on what regional problem solving is. There were statutes enacted by the legislature in the mid to late 1990s that provide an incentive for local governments to work together on land use problems on a project-by-project basis without setting up any sort of fixed formal regional governance framework, but allow local governments to come together and work on a particular planning program with the governments at the table who are necessary to resolve whatever the problem is. So it's a very flexible tool. The incentive for governments to do that is that if they can achieve unanimity among the local governments and in terms of what they propose for a plan to resolve that problem, they are not required to comply with rules of the Land Conservation and Development Commission. They still need to comply with state statute, and they still need to comply with the statewide land use planning goals, but they do not have to comply with the more detailed requirements of LCDC rules. That was intended to provide a significant incentive and more flexibility to local government in our land use planning program for them to work together on a project basis as a region. So there have been four instances where local governments have used this tool. One of them was successful in Deschutes County and actually resulted in the adoption of a plan. The other ones have either not been successful or are still in process. So we had a relatively well-known example involving Polk County that was not successful because one of the counties involved in that process actually backed out of it and did not agree to the plan at the end of the process. And then we're right in the middle of, and if Representative Esquivel were here, he knows about this, we're in the middle of a process in Bear Creek.
Not literally middle, though. Like 9 years in, middle.
Well, thank you, Representative Clem. I appreciate that. I appreciate that remark. I truly hope it is not the middle of that process also.
Sorry.
We hope we're at very close to the end of a regional problem-solving process in Bear Creek Valley. Thank you. So the problems that have come to light with regard to the RPS statute are, first of all, it's a very confusing set of statutes. It does not set forth a clear process for local governments to follow to address a particular planning problem. It's not clear how it gets started. It's not clear who needs to be at the table. It's not clear what the public process is for participation in the regional planning effort, and it's not clear under what circumstances, if a local government decides not to be a part of that effort, the whole thing falls apart or not. There's just a lot of ambiguity in the statute, and that's made it very difficult for it to be used successfully.
Thank you.
Representative?
You said there's only four of them that was going on. I thought in prior land use committee, in my prior life in a land use committee, I heard about this process being used for, say, you want to build a big distribution center outside of Bend, and you have wetlands problems, and you have Department of Transportation problems. And I thought this process was being used in those more micro, in terms of huge, comprehensive plan. Is that the same regional problem-solving process?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, it probably is. This is a very flexible tool that can be used either on a micro basis or a more macro basis. You could use it to address a particular, for instance, to take your example, a warehouse distribution facility that a particular jurisdiction is trying to site, and there are a number of regulatory problems. You could use this process for that. Or you could use it for a region-wide planning process to identify a number of sites that are appropriate for that sort of use. It could be done either way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So the recommendations coming from the Big Look Task Force are to essentially clarify the provisions of law regarding regional problem solving to make it to provide more certainty to the participants about what the rules are for how to participate and what the circumstances are under which it can't go forward. There was quite a bit of discussion in the task force about whether to replace the requirement for a consensus on the plan with a supermajority. And I know this is one of the issues you're likely to talk about today. The task force heard quite a bit of testimony about that and decided not to recommend that, to continue the requirement for a consensus in order for a plan to be approved. But at the same time, the task force also felt that, again, we need a better process so we know up front who needs to be a part of that consensus. If a jurisdiction is not necessary to resolution of whatever the problem is, they shouldn't have a seat at the table and shouldn't be able to stop the other jurisdictions from moving forward with a plan. So I can, if you want, that's the high-level overview. I could walk you through the task force recommendations specifically. I think from the department's perspective, we would recommend some further amendments even to what the task force has provided that provide a two-step process for regional problem solving, with a first step being to clearly define what is the problem that is being addressed here through a land use plan and who needs to be at the table, and to have those things come to LCDC for sign off by LCDC at the beginning of the process, along with a set time frame given to the local jurisdictions to then go back and have the public process, work out the details of the plan, and come back to LCDC for approval of the plan, so that we provide a more structured environment, so the jurisdictions know up front who needs to be included and who doesn't, so that there isn't this risk of somebody going off sideways who may or may not be necessary to the process. So that would be, and I think those amendments would be quite easy to make to what you have from the task force that provides other clarifications to regional problem solving. If I could, Madam Chair, one last comment. This is distinct from the recommendations coming from the task force addressing the criteria for agricultural and forest lands, which allow things to be done on a regional basis. This is an existing program in statute that can be used for addressing a variety of land use problems. Thank you.
I'd like Representative Garrett to be able to speak to this first, since he's been particularly working on this along with Representative Esquivel. So if you have comments to add as well, Representative, let's start with Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whitman, your very last comment got to the question I was going to open with, which is, I think there has been some confusion about how different provisions of the bill relate to each other. Can you say more about how the regional problem-solving tool, as it exists and as it's proposed to be refined here, relates to the completely separate provision for redefinition of rural lands?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Garrett. They are completely separate. The regional problem-solving process could be used, for instance, for a county and perhaps a city or two counties to make decisions about what could be allowed in a particular area for a forest land, for instance, where there are LCDC rules that regulate that quite specifically. But the regional problem-solving process probably is not the right process for this notion of reevaluating what the criteria are for agricultural and what land should be protected as agricultural lands or forest lands. There are other processes that could be used for that, but because an RPS project still has to comply with state statute and with the statewide land use planning goals, it's probably not the right vehicle for this sort of new look at what land should be agricultural and what land should be forest. Does that answer your question?
That's very helpful. So this, if we're looking for a release valve for some of the so-called misdesignated land out there, the regional problem-solving process is not really a suitable avenue to deal with that, because the regional problem-solving process doesn't allow for any change to the use of land that's inconsistent with state statute.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, that's correct. And it's actually the provisions, the criteria for what lands must be designated as agricultural lands and then as forest lands are in statewide land use planning goal, not in the rules. So they can't be waived or jurisdiction can't be exempted from them through this particular process.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other overall comments on RPS?
Not yet.
Okay. Representative Esquivel, since you've also had an interest in this area, any overall comments on the regional problem solving program?
Well, I thank you, Madam Chair. I think this vehicle is for
extended, like we did in Southern Oregon, which we're on the verge of completing, extended planning between municipalities that are growing close to one another. Could be used for water, sewage, depends upon what the communities are, depends upon what the issue is. I think it could be a valuable tool, although what is recommended in this, I think, doesn't help the situation anyone one iota. I think that what the recommendations are, at least the people that I've talked to that have been thoroughly involved in that for almost 9 years now, they don't think much of what we have in 2229 for regional problem solving. In fact, they think very little of it. The people involved with it need to have some kind of a guideline to start with, and more importantly, what happened in this process that we were derailed at one time almost was that there was a budget note, and we ended up pulling out the LCDC representative from the process. So these people were working in a vacuum, and then when they had a proposal, they'd have to go to LCDC, and LCDC said, no, you can't do that. Well, then they'd have to go back in a vacuum, start over again, and it was very frustrating, and that was a 2-year period, I think. And it was very, very frustrating. It should never be defunded when we're in the process of having that many people coming at the table trying to get a solution, because I think we could be on the verge of some very good planning here in spite of all the things that have happened, I guess is what I want to say. But we need to have a more refined definition of what, one, is what they're up to, if what they're going to accomplish, and two, what is the procedure. I think procedure is real important. But you can't micromanage that, because that isn't the intent of that. The intent is they have to have flexibility in what they do.
Thank you. I think some of the suggestions address exactly that problem, but there may need to be more work done on it. If you have specific suggestions, that would be really helpful. Not necessarily here, but as we work to develop an amendment. Anybody else? Questions? Comments?
Madam Chair, I have to say I'm still a little confused with response to the, I mean, with what was on my mind, my previous experience was, and I'm trying to recreate the old statute looking through this. I thought that regional problem solving had been used in many instances where the problem was a much more micro problem. Now, it looks like if that's the case, this will take away those uses, and it would seem to me those in some ways were really, at least as I remember hearing about a couple of them, were just a very helpful way to get a project going that had four agencies fighting with each other as to how the, as to whether or not the project should
Mr.
go.
Mr. Whitman, you may want to stay up at the table.
I may just be misremembering that, but if I'm remembering correctly, that's a tool I don't think we want to take away from, and anybody that's involved in any little planning project knows Fire and Transportation says one thing, the fire department says something else. All of a sudden, you've got a wetlands that you didn't know you had, and you've got somebody else to deal with in it. And I think this kind of a process helps prevent some bad land use decisions, which I think we should all be really committed to.
Mr. Whitman?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenblick, if I might help clear up some confusion here. You're absolutely right, Representative Greenblick. And the confusion here is we're talking about several different types of processes. If there's one thing that planners love, it's process. So we have something that was instituted back in the mid-1990s called Community Solutions that has now evolved into the whole economic revitalization team and that
exactly.
whole process.
That's what I was thinking.
And Oregon Solutions. That is very much alive, active. We participate in it in a number of instances. It is very much focused on the micro level, as you have described. It is very much about bringing agents, state agencies, federal agencies, local government, and private business together to make sure that everybody's rowing in the same direction. Very important program.
This won't affect that at all?
This will not affect that at all. This is usually going to be more a macro level planning tool than a project specific, let's get something specific fixed, focus of Oregon Solutions.
Madam Chair, what are some examples of more macro level projects that would be suitable for this? We haven't really heard examples yet.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, one example, probably the highest macro level, and it's very ambitious, what the Greater Bear Creek region has done with their particular regional problem-solving effort is to try to plan for very long-term growth management in Southern Oregon. Where are the cities in Jackson County going to grow over the next 40 to 50 years? And not only looking at growth management, but also looking at transportation planning and also looking at the economics of the agricultural industry in terms of what's sustainable there in the pear industry and other important agricultural industries in Southern Oregon, trying to look at all of that, bring it together, and make some reasoned decision for all of those jurisdictions about where the area should grow. That would be one example. Another example, as I started to allude to, would be if... I hesitate.
You may not use that one. So let's see, on forest lands, if a couple of counties felt that there was a real need for a tourist industry-oriented overnight accommodations on forest lands that's not allowed under the current Goal 4 rules, and they had an amenity, perhaps natural resource, that could be used to draw people to an area, they could work under regional problem solving to try to develop a program to allow that use as a region working together, either a couple of counties or counties and cities, to do that. I was going to use Wine Country Hotels, just so you know, but the only problem with that example is that it's actually limited by state statute to a large extent also, so it you run into some problems there. But that gives you a more...
To a certain extent. Crater Lake has the lodges and has all that. The Oregon Caves has its thing. And
yes, exactly. Yeah, Representative Esquivel.
We tried that at Smith Rock.
Another question
to figure out how to do it.
Okay. Representative Garrett.
On the question of unanimity versus a supermajority, I think it might be helpful if you would lay out how the task force dealt with that question, some of the pros and cons on either side. I know that some members have wanted to address that, but I don't think we've really heard the policy rationales on either side of that question.
Chair Nolan, Representative Garrett. So in the regional problem-solving efforts that have not been successful, by and large, they've not been successful because the local jurisdictions that have been participants have gone through a fairly lengthy planning process and have developed a plan, and at the end of the day, one of the jurisdictions, and if you have 10 or 12 jurisdictions, it only takes one. If one of the jurisdictions decides they don't like the result after that public process, and they not only refuse to participate, but don't affirmatively do not agree with the plan, then under the current statute, it can't go forward. It may be there may be other processes to help it go forward, but it can't use the regional problem solving the way the statute's written right now. So I think the argument for not having unanimity is you don't want one jurisdiction. It's the political dynamic of having one jurisdiction being able to hold all the other jurisdictions hostage. The counter to that is if you don't require a consensus, our experience has been, to a large extent, that it's that requirement for consensus and compromise between the local jurisdictions that leads to a good
generally to a good planning result. It's like an on-off switch. It's hard to find an in-between.
Can I ask a follow-up? Yes. Would it also be fair to say that if we don't require consensus, it's going to be a lot harder to get jurisdictions to enter into this process in the first place?
Consensus or unanimity?
I think we're using those terms interchangeably for this purpose.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, I am using, just to clarify, I'm using consensus and unanimity to mean the same thing here. I'm sorry, Representative
Garrett. The question was, if we don't require unanimity in the end, it's easy for me to imagine we won't get local governments to the table to begin with if they think they're going to be dragged along.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Well, particularly, if I might, if we've identified the participants as entities who have to take an action in order to implement the final decision. And if a city or a county or one of the cities or some other special purpose district, I don't know if they're ever involved, have to take an action in order for the whole thing to be successful, then leaving them out or having five of the six say yes and that six say no, you're almost dooming it.
Madam Chair, I think that's correct. So again, the key is defining what it is that you're trying to do and who needs to be a part of that solution. And I think doing that carefully up front so that everybody's on the same page right from the start, and then doing it relatively quickly, based on the experience we've had over the last 10 years, maybe 15 years.
So a new mayor
is key.
For council.
Deadlines are wonderful things. Representative Gary.
On the same topic, it's also easy to imagine that you might start the process by defining what you think the problem is. As you engage in it, the problem takes on new dimensions, and you think about it more broadly. And you might then think you need more participants at the table. Would the bill allow the addition of more participants as it evolves?
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, I think that would be advisable to allow that. In its current form, it doesn't. But I think allowing the participants, if they want, to broaden it based on public input into the process, and they discover that new things should or new aspects of the problem need to be dealt with and new jurisdictions are necessary to do that, then there should be an ability to come back, get approval of that, and go forward on that basis.
Mike.
Go ahead.
This really pushes you to want to have the absolute minimum at the table you can possibly have in order to have everybody there that needs specifically to solve the problem. But you might organize then a sort of different tier to go with that. You've got jurisdictions that have interest, jurisdictions that have input, jurisdictions that can be helpful. I mean, you might literally want a real role for them, but not the role that has the final stake, the sort of the limited partners and the general partners and the limited partners in a business context where general partners have to have unanimity, but the limited partners probably should have something to say and should be involved in it. There might be a way to work out that.
If I might, Madam Chair, Representative Greenwick, that's an interesting notion. It's one that, again, in the Bear Creek effort, there's been some experimentation with that sort of approach. And I think that concept of having basically necessary participants and then supporting participants, the necessary participants being ones that have to do something to implement it, the supporting ones being ones who are maybe affected by it, don't have to do anything. The latter would not have to have their agreement at the end. If they wanted to support it, that would be great. So I think you could get more regional involvement that way, and I think it could be written that way.
Anybody else want to explore? I'm hearing, I'm not hearing objection to an interest in streamlining this process is the way I'd characterize what the task force is recommending. Let me raise generally a kind of straw poll on the notion of two steps, defining the participants and the objective, and a deadline. Did I hear that right, Mr. Whitman?
Madam Chair, you did.
And then following the plan and meeting the deadline. So two steps. What's the committee's sense on those two steps as a refinement to the process and perhaps valuable in streamlining it? I see a couple heads nodding. I'm not seeing anyone jumping out of their seat. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
You bet. That's what we're trying to do.
One of the things, I'm not sure the reward is enough, except maybe the process in its own right is a reward. You know, coming to a solution is a reward, but the reward of simply being able to ignore LCD or DLCD regulations, that's a sort of puny award, is that? I mean, was there a discussion?
Oh, I'm not so sure that's true.
Well, I mean, being able to avoid the goals.
What about that?
I mean, was there a discussion about raising the stakes?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, there was discussion about, in fact, there was a lot of attention given by the task force to how do we give more incentive to local governments to work on this basis. That was something they were very focused on. There was some discussion about the statewide land use planning goals in addition to the rules. That would be a major
big step.
And they decided not to do that. There is another significant effective incentive that the department has used to encourage regional problem solving, and that is funding. Not complete funding, but substantial funding from the grant programs operated and approved by the legislature for technical assistance to local governments to pay for some of the cost of this.
Mr. Whitman, do you now use or could you use queuing preference?
Madam Chair, you are referring to queuing preference for the grant program. Is that correct? Or queuing preference
for the result?
For the result.
Is there any incentive that could be offered that when communities use this process and essentially do some of the work for your department, because they come with a consensus proposal, that they go to the front of the line or they skip in terms of getting on your agenda?
Madam Chair, we don't really have a backlog of such things at the moment. You know, if somebody comes to us with something that's ready for review by the commission, we generally get them in there and review it. There's not...
Well, that's good news.
It is good news. There are processes to go through. There may be some in the audience who would be interested in discussing ways of expediting appeals of such decisions, and that's another possible incentive that could be provided here.
Mm-hmm. We have nods.
We have a nod at the end of the table. Well, or are you just...
I'm nodding both for that and also to suggest that we not just, for fear of how significant it might be, skip over the incentive that was mentioned here, which is if we have created a scenario where you have robust participation and people have put 9 years into it, I think it's at least worthy of this committee's consideration that they be freed from the appeals process.
It's done.
Or, you know, I think it was referred to here as being exempted from the goals. But, I mean, whatever way you want to put it and however you want to craft it, and obviously I'm sensitive to the idea that, you know, you want to ensure that you've had a robust process and that somebody wouldn't, you know, that a small group, for lack of a better way of putting it, wouldn't use the process. That to create something that wouldn't have wide agreement. But I think, you know, just to take Representative Esquivel's local example, you know, that many jurisdictions have come together and spent 9 years on something. I don't know why you'd allow something like that to be subjected to, you know, the constant, almost unending appeals process, which just drags it out even further. I mean, I think if you can define what robust participation is on the part of these jurisdictions, if they have spent that kind of time and put that kind of commitment in developing a plan, let them have their plan.
Madam Chair.
What we're hoping for, go ahead, Representative. Let me digest that thought.
Yeah, I mean, it would be hard to go through that, spend 9 years, and somebody come and say, that violates Goal 4. Whatever Goal 4 is, I can't remember. But
we're going to spend some time on Goal 4.
Okay. Or 7. Or the new Goal 20.
Another way to look at it is, and I don't know the details of this particular one, if it were a straightforward issue with a direct and easily endorsed solution, it's hard to imagine that it would have taken 8 years to find that solution.
Straight A to B, right?
This one probably, and I suspect that problems that would want to use this process are the real knotty ones that don't have obvious consensus between the county and the city, or between among adjacent cities, may have to do with encroachments or, you know, downstream effects or other things that burble over. But if they were simple, I would think that it wouldn't take that long. And one of the proposals I'm hearing is to put some confines on it so that the deadlines either force a resolution or force a recognition that there is no solution. But Representative Hanna, wanted to say something.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. To this point, it seems to me, and Representative Greenlick touched on this, if the regional governments can use the process of regionalization to their benefit, and it in effect supersedes LCDC, then this would be something new and different and likely beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, maybe Representative Garrett with a legal background, but I read down through Section 11 and I get all the way down to A, 2A, and the amendments to comprehensive plans or land use regulations or new comprehensive plan revisions or land use regulations conform on the whole with the purposes of the goals. And any failures to meet individual goals is technical or minor in nature. And so doesn't that take away everything you just said they got, in a sense? I mean, doesn't that mean they have to meet the goal?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, you're correct. That is the standard for commission approval of the plan at the end of this process. So it must conform with the purpose of the goal. That actually is the standard that LCDC has used for review of local comprehensive plans for compliance with the statewide planning goals right from the start, including acknowledgement. It's the acknowledgement standard that was used back in the late 70s and in 1980s. We're not exempting local governments from having to conform on the whole with the purposes of the planning goals. What we are exempting them from is having to comply with all the minutiae of the LCDC rules that implement those goals, and that's very significant. There are LCDC has a substantial body of rules implementing each of the goals, and so this is intended to give those local governments quite a bit of flexibility for how they achieve those statewide planning goals without having to go through all the minutiae of the LCDC rules.
Let's do away with those rules altogether. And seriously, and use this as a standard. I mean, we're going to talk to the simplification. It seems to me if there...
We can talk to the simplification. All of those rules and all of the segments of statute, maybe not without exception, but most of them came about largely to clarify what was intended in the more macro level language. So as we talk about the task force's recommendation to eliminate complexity, there's been a temptation, I think, to conflate the length of a passage or the length of a section of ORS or of the administrative rules as proportional to the complexity. The longer a passage is, the more complex it is. If you look at it, actually, much of that is the reverse, that you put a lot of detail and language in there because there's been a need in, over time to clarify what's included, what's not included, where it applies, where it doesn't apply, so that people have a clear roadmap. Even if it's lengthy, at least it's objective, not subject to interpretation.
But I've heard tell that with the complexity of the rules, you can be in a situation where in Section 3 there's a set of rules and in Section 14C there's a set of rules that turns it into a no left turn only situation. I think that's the kind of stuff that we might want to try and...
I'm
not talking about statutes. I'm talking about statute rules.
You're talking about administrative rules.
That it's true in the statute, too.
How is it summed up to me that we've made it so simple that no one can understand it?
There's a lot of anecdotes about that. But the call for specifics so far goes unanswered.
That would be useful.
Representative?
I think there's a path that connects what Representative Hanna and Representative Greenberg are talking about. And I don't think you necessarily want to do away with those rules if you're going to provide what I was suggesting on this end, because those rules and the complexity of those rules can be the incentive to choose the other path. In other words, you maintain what you have, but you offer essentially a different process and say, if you can come together and find agreement and use this alternative process, this still exists, and if you can't agree, you're going to defer it back to it. But, I mean, Representative Nick was suggesting doing away with them, and I would actually make the argument, keep them there because they act as an incentive for the parties to come together in what we're sort of banting about here, and negotiate, compromise, and everybody has an incentive to stay out of the briar patch, if you will.
I need to set the record straight. Something misunderstood. I was not seriously suggesting doing away with all LCDC rules, sure. But I was suggesting if it is such a
we can audit
an issue, we should...
And that's one of the recommendations.
I had a question, Madam Chair, for yes. Mr. Whitman.
Good
this
point,
idea of expediting appeals, maybe we can hear more about that from others. I think it's very intriguing as another carrot. The department ultimately says yes or no to a regional problem-solving plan. Is the department's decision to approve or not approve, is that where does that come in the process? Is that approval of a basic framework and plan for reaching agreement at the beginning and then another approval at the end? And is that appealable if the department were to deny approval of that?
Chair Nolan, Representative Garrett, let me try to get the different parts of that question. So first of all, just conceptually, if we were going to have a two-step process and the commission were going to approve the definition of the problem, who needs to be at the table, and a time frame. My current inclination in terms of a recommendation to you would be that decision not be appealable. But the quid pro quo for that would be that it would have to get done, the whole process would have to get done pretty quickly. And
And I think the reason for that is that if you did allow an appeal of that initial step, you could have the whole process just tied up for a very long period of time. Part of that, though, I think is getting the right standard in the statute for who needs to be a participant, and that will need to be something that you need to look at very carefully. I think if you have a standard that you're comfortable with, that decision, the appeal of that decision could be deferred till the end of the process. Right now, the way the process works is it all comes to LCDC at the end, technically. Operationally, the way it works is, to take an example, Jackson County and the cities in that region have been to LCDC, I think, 4 or 5 times in the last 18 months to check in about where they are and are they going in the right direction and to get informal feedback from the commission. So that's actually, I think that has worked fairly well. I think it's kept the region and the commission on the same page. But it shouldn't even be necessary. We should have a process that we just get through this much faster.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In deference to your request for specifics, if our idea is to, if the idea is to improve the regional approach to land use planning through this specific bill, I just ask the committee members to look at deleting 9, 10, and 12, the sections, just delete them. Keep section 11 and take out the 2A piece. Now you have something that talks about regional land use planning, puts a goal forth similar, well, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth. We've discussed there being a incentive. It leaves the incentive in there because then the vested work done by those local governments would be rewarded by a decision that has some stickum.
You said 9, 10, and 12.
9, 10, and 12. Keep 11 because it deals with regional planning, and it gives them the incentive to do so, except, I mean, and we heard Mr. Whitman's answer to 2A. I just read that as say, you get it, but we go back to 2A and it sort of taketh away. And I may not understand the intricacies of that, but that's what it seems like to me is you get the reward, except down below we take it away potentially. And
I understand what you're saying. You're saying leave the original statute language in place and take that, or delete the, because 9 and 10 are amending existing language.
Yeah, I'm not sure you even need any of that if you're talking about the regional approach. I mean, if again our goal is just simplifying all of this stuff, put a section out there that gives a regional approach, gives an incentive to the regional organizations for doing it, and make it easier to deal with.
Well, do we need section 9?
No.
Even 9-1?
Representative, can you give me a summary of what it is you're trying to accomplish by that recommendation?
Absolutely. I'm trying to simplify the process, giving the regional folks their due and making the reward very high for doing it and simplifying. I mean, I know we pay good money for great legal work, but if our goal is to simplify and make this better, Section 11 really lays that out, and it gives a great deal of incentive to local governments to participate.
And that's one of the goals. I haven't heard anyone. I think another goal that we have, at least tacitly endorsed, is that the land use system has created good benefits and that we want to preserve those benefits and similar benefits in the future. So we're trying to pursue those goals simultaneously, and sometimes they come bump up against each other. But the task force also was recommending some reduced complexity I don't know if that's the same as simplicity. Certainly some recognition of local variations within the state. Mr. Whitman?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, I think the statutes could be simplified and clarified. The trade-off here is always if you do not spell things out in statute, then you get into situations where it's not clear how to proceed, and you get the sort of argument and arguments over process that, frankly, we're struggling with right now.
Right.
And we'd all much rather spend our time, I think, on just getting to the right result and stop struggling so much about the process. So I think we're all trying to get to the same place and do that in as simple and direct a fashion as we can. I think we can do much better than what we have in statute right now.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that at all. And again, I'm telling you, I'm not an attorney, but I'm just talking common sense. I'm just saying, I've read through Section 9 as an example, and I say to myself, I'm not sure what it does to meet even what you just said. I'm trying to apply it and go, what are we answering by what we're saying there that isn't somewhere else in the system? I just can't get there with it. And so as the chair asked for specifics and looking at ways to do it, it's just a thought. It's a possibility.
Any other ideas?
It's not an idea, it's a question.
Yeah.
We've been discussing appeals or limiting appeals. It's only pertaining to appeals of the rules to LCDC, not court appeals of the statute, because the whole thing is designed to not touch statute. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, I'm not sure I understand your question. What I was referring to was expediting appeals in the judicial system.
Yeah.
Right, and if I could, Madam Chair, right now there is an expedited appeal process for appeals of decisions of the Land Use Board of Appeals to the Court of Appeals. There has been some discussion about whether there should be a similar expedited appeal of a decision by the commission to on a plan coming out of regional problem solving, and that could be an incentive.
That's what I was getting at earlier. If we were to give priority in LUBA to appeals after local governments have gone through potentially years of regional problem solving, it would be nice if we could, rather than, I'm not suggesting we don't have appeals, I think appeals are necessary, but bring them to the front of the line for appeals to LUBA, if that's how the system currently, I don't know how
to. LUBA.
Well, that's possible,
right,
too.
Appeals, right, to the appeals court.
Mr. Whitman.
Madam Chair, Representative Garrett, Representative Greenlick, just to clarify on this, the decision to approve a regional plan coming out of a regional problem-solving project is made not by LUBA, it's made by the Land Conservation and Development Commission. That was a policy decision made by the legislature, I think under the notion that LCDC being more policy-oriented, this is a more open-ended standard, was a more appropriate body to give flexibility to local government than LUBA, which is typically reviewing things on very narrow criteria.
And we go
is
right
the
to
commission's
appeal.
Decision appealable?
It is to the Court of Appeals.
I see. So it's appealable completely.
That's right. And that's the appeal that I'm talking about expediting.
Okay. That would be probably even more worthwhile.
Yeah, that would be very valuable.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I probably should caution you, however, that there may be
somebody's
there,
awesome, sure.
There may be a fiscal impact of doing that.
It always costs money. Okay. Thank you for the caution. This might be why. Go ahead.
Help me understand the reasoning for the fiscal impact of bypassing
the possible.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, to clarify, I said possible. And I say that only because there's been some informal discussion about this, and that was a concern raised, is whether by moving those appeals to the front of the line,
and requiring more people to do them more quickly, there would be some cost associated with that. On the part, well, yeah.
And I'm the only member of the Ways and Means Sub here, so I suppose I should
so
be concerned about that.
So just find money, Representative.
Right. Yeah, right. Yep. Okay, we'll just work on that.
Okay.
Next year.
Good. That's helpful. I appreciate the suggestion. Anything else? I'm finding some interest in this. We don't have specific words finalized, but some interest and some interest in trying to simplify as much as possible. And we need to balance the interest in simplification with the interest in retaining fairness and equity that we spent a fair amount of time talking about last week.
I think the interest, at least my interest, is to maintain such a process and to streamline it in a way that makes it useful for local jurisdictions. I mean, these aren't easy decisions. I think the analogous decision was the Metropolitan Metro's Boundary Commissions, where you had to get the areas together, and it took, I think, 10 years to work out the final detail, which was between Beaverton and Washington County or something. But these are all useful things to be doing, and so I would say, yeah, let's try and foster the idea, and let's try and make it work better.
Okay. Anything else, Representative Kellen?
I'm still working, I guess, on my last question, and trying to process here. It's a little frustrating to me that if we try to expedite a process and respect alternative decision-making, then somehow that translates to more people needed to oversee those decision making processes. So it seems to me like if you take out some steps, it should save money instead of cost money. I know it's a simplistic.
Very odd.
It depends on whether we put deadlines on multiple things that go to the Court of Appeals. If the Court of Appeals has to do a certain turnaround on not just this but other issues, they can only force so many camels through that eye of the needle at one time.
Sorry, it's just an opinion I needed to.
But you're right, Representative. You know, fair question. Before we finalize our conversation about this, I wanted to get insight from people who represent some of these local governments to give us perspective if they would be interested in doing that. Mr. Schlack, perhaps you could weigh in on how the counties see this process, either the current one or the proposal. And Ms. Ludwig, on behalf of cities, that would be helpful.
Here, or do you want to go over there?
I'm going to get my Kleenex.
Yeah, take your.
Sorry. I've already got calls, so I'll ask calls and ask to give me something I don't have.
I have a stomach flu. You want that too?
I don't want that.
Yeah.
So you know the process as it exists now. I think you're a little familiar with the proposals that we've been talking about.
Chair Nolan,
how would it help? Go ahead.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. And it's interesting that you talk about regional problem solving, because I was there when the legislature gave birth to it and helped draft the initial language way back. And also I'll take somewhat responsibility for the Polk County, Yamhill County regional problem solving effort, because I started that. And unfortunately I left the employment of Polk County before it was finished, and it was not, it was a great idea, let's put it that way. I had written down a number of things that if I had the opportunity that I could share some comments with the committee that I would like to do. And the first one is on behalf of the 36 counties. We believe that regional problem solving is a very positive tool to address issues and in some cases differences that jurisdictions have, and an opportunity to work together to address those. In terms of something that could be done to help facilitate regional problem solving, and you've talked about a couple of these. I wrote time frame, not to exceed 4 years, because what we have is when we get an extended time frame, we really don't focus and we really don't think about a start and a finish, and the finish winds up continuing and continuing and continuing. So my suggestion would be to indicate that regional problem solving is something that basically has a 4-year time frame, and that's what you need when you enter it to be thinking about. I like suggestion of Mr. Whitman about a 2-step process. I think that makes a lot of sense, that we need to get clarification of who needs to be at the table, and also to define or focus the issues that will be addressed. And that was the second thing I wrote down, because I think right now regional problem solving is somewhat open-ended, and we have a propensity to either add other issues as we go along, and it may be that if we had a time frame and you undertake one regional problem solving effort and you come to a conclusion, it doesn't preclude you from doing it again. If there's other issues that you need to address, that it would be important to, let's finish this. Yeah, we've identified those. They're in the queue. Now let's go back and work together to continue working towards the ultimate, let's say, the more complete response to the issues. So I think that would be very important. And you also talked about clarifying what happens if somebody pulls out. And I think it's important to, the ones that need to stay in the process, I would say, are the ones that need to amend their comprehensive plans. I mean, we're talking amendments to comprehensive plans. It's the city and the county. Special districts, I think they're important, but they don't do your land use planning. They don't adopt a comprehensive plan, but they are they take an integral part in the implementation of plans by providing the services that they do. So that I would like to suggest. Another thing that could be done to help is, and this could have a fiscal impact, the participation by state agencies. The draft that you have talks about the impact of the Department of Transportation and their participation to a degree in regional problem solving if you're going to address issues that would have an impact on the state highway system. But I would suggest that there may be instances where other state agencies that would be invited to participate should take a seat at the table and participate throughout, because what happens is if they don't participate and then you're working on this and then you get down towards the end, somebody says, whoa, wait a minute, you didn't consider this, or we've got additional information. So I think it's essential that those state agencies that are invited to participate have representation and stay engaged throughout the process, not maybe just at the beginning and then 3 years later they show up and maybe offer some comments, or wait till the plan's in final form and then make comments at this point. Like the idea about the appeals process maybe being expedited to some manner. So I think those are items that would help. And of course, funding is always an issue. And so I think that's one of the things. Let me express a concern, at least on behalf of counties. The state has about $2.5 million in grants to local governments for planning. That has been kind of the platform for, the last 5 biennium, if not longer. And when you start putting priorities on things, you wind up that this has got a priority and these other kinds of things kind of have to fend for themselves, and that can be problematic. LCDC has a grants advisory committee that helps, I guess, if you will, prioritize or makes a recommendation as to what the priorities should be in terms of grants based on the emphasis that we believe the program should respond to. That's, I think that's worked fairly well the last few bienniums at this point. But that is a concern. Needless to say, there needs to be some grants for regional problem solving should we move forward in the future with this, these endeavors at this point. And I think counties will be one that will be very interested in the way that the direction that regional problem is solving is going. And I would just finalize by saying the going to one county and jurisdictions within that county, I think you will see that more jurisdictions will be interested in availing themselves of that opportunity. That doesn't preclude more than one county at this point, but the idea of two or more counties has been problematic for a long time.
Okay. Ms. Ludwig.
Linda Ludwig, representing the League of Oregon City. I didn't bear the fruit of borning the regional problem-solving program like Mr. Slack did, so my comments are probably going to be shorter and a little more practical or on the ground. I think it is a reasonable tool to keep in the toolbox. As we've seen it today, I don't think it's an exceptional tool in moving yet, in moving objectives, local objectives forward. Again, though, I think it has some merit, and I think it's worthy of some redo within the statutory provisions. I still, very much respect Mr. Whitman's comments. I still wonder if there is some way to provide more incentives for this program so local jurisdictions will want to use it. And I still come back to being able to soften some of the compatibility review standards with the goals if there are just isn't any leeway there. I'm not sure softening the rules has given us enough to date in order locally to want to utilize this program, and I believe that's been the review standard since the program has been in inception. So that's not changing anything, not complying with the rules. So I think we need to go beyond that if there is any way we possibly can.
I have a question on that.
You bet.
Is that okay? So when these regional problem-solving efforts take place, are they always essentially involving things outside of a UGB? So it seems like, you know, what we talked about in the TDR work group was sort of you soften the standards if it's inside the UGB. We're trying to promote both density and problem-solving and, you know, I think Chandler's got a series of ideas, but you know that might be one way to look at where you soften things. Because, you know, we've talked about, if it's in a municipality or if it's in the UGB, that's what we're supposed to be trying to promote. And there's, you know, again, maybe the sort of not in my backyard outcries that people want to have their day, you know, down at city council or wherever. But if their city councilors are participating in this, the election is maybe where they, you know, have their appeal, not, you know, every step of the way. So just a thought. I've come up with nothing useful for several hours here today. I'm just trying to see if I come up with one before my day's over. Yeah, thanks.
All right, there is a provision within the language to utilize the TDR program portion in the regional problem solving, and I think that has a lot of merit that's currently in the bill. I agree.
But even without TDRs, if we're just talking about softening compatibility standards, it's in UGB, maybe that's one place we know we could soften them, kind of thing. I think Richard knows my point. He can probably take a look at it too.
And frankly, there wouldn't be any real reason for cities to be participating unless it was the project was inside the UGB or had some impacts inside the UGB. The time frame standards are a good thing.
Counties might care. Counties certainly would care outside a UGB.
Yeah, I'm talking for cities.
Yep.
I think that two bienniums, 4 years is probably a really good time frame, maybe with a one-year extension. As you talked earlier about having the ability to scoop in new people as an issue may evolve, I also think it's important. We've all worked in work groups. And in some ways, this two-step process is somewhat like a group periodic review commission or LCDC process is what I'm getting. Sometimes at the beginning of that process, a particular jurisdiction may think it has some skin in the game, but after some conversations, maybe some repeated, repetitious meetings, you really start to define the issue. A jurisdiction may want to be able to drop off initially as well as being scooped into the process. So I think that two-way revolving door makes some sense there too, in order to really target and focus on what the problem is, who the players are, and the time frame there. I concur with Mr. Slack in looking at the local government grants program as an incentive for this, or in terms of putting any priorities on that program. That's effectively done right now through the local government grants committee. And the viability, I think, of those grants in terms of getting appropriations, general fund appropriations for those grants from the state in the future may be very difficult. We just actually are likely to lose through Ways and Means Action the residual amount of those grants that we had, which was a significant impact to cities and counties. So I wouldn't look there in particular. There's one other thing that in the bill language that I guess I would like to comment on. There's a portion in the bill that would have it in Section 11 sub 1. It's submitted to LCDC in the manner of periodic review, although there is language that already states that the Commission has exclusive jurisdiction of review of amendments for the RPS program. I'm real itchy about moving forward for submission to LCDC in the manner of periodic review. The Commission will be looking at adopting some new rules in March that would attempt to define that phrase in the matter of periodic review for a statutory site that has to do with UGP expansions. I'm very itchy about how they're attempting to define that term. I think it has some problems, and I would hate to have those problems roll over into the RPS program in terms of how the bill language is written. So I just wanted to bring that forward.
Okay. Good points. Anybody else? Mr. Schlack.
Chair Nolan, members of the committee, just a couple of other thoughts at this point as the discussion continues to go. I think one of the reasons why I think you're going to see more counties potentially in cooperation with cities and special districts and that involved maybe in regional problem solving is the fact that most of your urban cities or larger cities at this point are required to go through periodic review, and they're required to do that on a regular basis. So they have a planning process that's open that allows them to deal with a multitude, you know, a number of issues and that they revolve, address through the periodic review process. And for at least the larger ones, like Salem and that, I think it's every 5 years or something like that. So, and then needless to say, there's dollars that comes with periodic review, and so that's the place that jurisdictions look like that. Most counties at this point are not, they're excused from periodic review unless we ask. There is a provision that a county can petition LCDC for periodic review, and that has happened more than once since the changes have been made at this point, because there are issues that need to be addressed. So that's one of the reasons, I think. And the other thing I would like to, take this opportunity to say that one of the areas that we need to do a whole lot of work is on infrastructure and capital facilities financing. And I think that is an area that regional problem solving could lend itself to, both in outside of urban growth boundaries and inside urban growth boundaries, to address what I would say is the most critical issue that we have that's facing the land use planning program at this point. So just wanted to share that thought with you.
I think we've got some good, yeah,
and how they, how we plant them out on the countryside. We've got some good thoughts here, some specific proposals, some kind of more conceptual ideas. We will continue to work this. I'm sensing that the committee has run its course on this topic. I will remind the committee that we do not have a meeting this Thursday. We are instead meeting Saturday morning. Ms. Ross, what time? 11 a.m. in Redmond at the Deschutes County Fairgrounds for a public hearing on House Bill. I'm sure I've got that bill here. 2227, I believe, relating to destination resorts. Ms. Ross can coordinate carpooling for committee members if you are interested in that. And we will look forward to a pretty robust discussion. Actually, this is public testimony, some opportunity for some clarification of those issues, but I think it's largely an opportunity for us to listen to folks because we're going there to hear what they have to say. It is not posted for work session. I'm not intending to work the bill on Saturday.
We're going to hear.
We're going to hear, yes. On House Bill 2229, the Big Look Task Force, I'm thinking about the next topic that we were planning to take up around classification of ag and forest land. I am taking a bit of a hiatus, and rather than hear that, rather than have a work session on that next week, I'm going to survey our counties to get a sense from them on how pressing an issue this is for them and where, frankly, it fits on their work plans for the next 2 years. If I hear from them that this is indeed a pressing issue that they really want to work on and want us to give them some leeway on, then I think it is worth our delving into trying to find a solution better than the one the task force recommended. But if it is not something that that many counties are going to be working on, I think we have to ask ourselves whether it is something that we want to invest time, energy, and state resources in trying to resolve. So I'm going to give the counties a little bit of time to give us some feedback on where this stacks in their planning priorities. And I will get back to you as I get that feedback back. So we're going to take a bit of a break from House Bill 2229, give the counties a couple of weeks to let us know just some sense of where they are on that. So next week we will be working a couple of more straightforward technical bills, probably including one that's come to us from the Senate. And we'll take a bit of a break from this topic, much as we have loved this robust discussion. So Saturday we will be at the Deschutes County Fairgrounds. Next Tuesday we will be back in Hearing Room E for a more traditional hearing and work session.
Is there a building at the fairgrounds?
Ms. Ross is in charge of all of this.
There's the South Sister Conference Center, and I'll resend all the maps to everyone so that you know exactly how to get there.
That'll be out in the road. Yeah.
And I think we've posted it and announced it for 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
You just set a time frame.
Bring your sleeping bag. This is as far as you're coming. We're going for it.
And I believe the anticipation was 2.5 to 3 hours.
Okay.
Bring lunch. Don't leave it open ended.
Well, I ask the committee what your preference is on that.
Bring your timer.
Good idea. Should we announce at the beginning a time limit when we start Saturday?
Well,
perhaps we can see. I mean, if there are 50 people in the room, we can hear from all of them. I'd take a side bet on that one.
Last one I was at was 5 hours. So if you don't want to go 5 hours, I'd narrow it down. But it could easily go 5 hours, and that's on 3-minute intervals.
We have posted a 2-minute time limit in the announcement.
We had 150 at the Healthcare Committee and grants pass.
Well, this was actually what I'm referring to as on destination resorts. Okay. Same exact topic, same deal, same,
after the
you know, 5 hours. And we let everybody go, but it took 5 hours to go through. So if you want less than 2 minutes, we'll probably get you three and a half, I'm guessing. Maybe. I mean, okay. If all the Powell Butte folks show up.
So you could ask people to come up as families, too. They're related. They speak together.
That actually would have helped in some cases.
We'll aim for about 2.5 to 3 hours, and we'll kind of size it up when we get there and see.
And maybe Cheyenne has dealt with this, but are we brown bagging? Are we bringing our own lunch, or what are we doing since we're going?
Since we are at the lunch hour, I don't know that we had thought about this. Our budget does not allow us to provide meals.
I'm not asking for you to pay for it.
The restrictions at the facility, and I will send those to you. Paperwork is still being resolved from the legislative administration, so the rules have to but I'll be getting that out to you.
No beer.
Like restrictions on what you can bring to.
So do you blow a lunch whistle
to the
and break out their bag?
So we could buy there on a Saturday with our per diem something, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And is it all right if we eat? Well, if we're in the middle of the public hearing, but I think that's the question
Representative Hannah was asking, right?
That's what we did in the Ways and Means hearings.
I think people will be fine if we eat a sandwich and work through lunch.
Yeah.
I'll try not to.
Anybody over-eat. Think that that's out of line?
I use my best manners.
I hope they brought their lunch,
okay.
Too.
So, yes, brown bag lunches.
We're their lunch. That's a big issue for
them. Unless.
Sounds like maybe we're buying
we
it.
Find
there.
Out that the facility won't allow us.
Yeah. The facility contracts exclusively with a provider, a caterer, and they require you to bring your
yeah.
Oh, that's the upshot.
That's fine.
Get us a menu.
Exclusive okay. Pouring rights. You know all about that.
I mean,
I look forward to the day, but I will not be able
no.
To.
Okay.
They got me
okay.
Your statement.
All right.
Exclusive pouring rights.
We will be adjourned then.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah.
Brian.
I think that was good.